Welcome to the Premium Way podcast, a space where premium is not reduced to aesthetics or price tags, but understood as identity, as a way of life. In here, we operate at the intersection of psychology, perception, strategy, leadership, and the invisible signals that decide who gets chosen, trusted, and remembered. Our philosophy? Ditch the stereotypes. Ditch the idea that premium has only one face. Premium was never meant to be sterile. It was meant to be rich in character, reflective of your true core and your dream buyer's deepest desires. Like the finest wine, layered, complex, unique, unmistakable to those who know what they are tasting. Refined without losing its edge, unafraid to be different, and impossible to confuse with anything else. This is the room where the ordinary stops applying. This is where standards are set, not followed, and where premium stops being something that you chase and becomes something you embody. This is your permission slip to succeed your way. I'm your host, Yasmin, and this is The Premium Way. Welcome to the very, very first guest expert interview episode in and on The Premium Way podcast. In front of me, I look at the beaming, beautiful, marvelous Susie Gray, the woman behind turning leaders into household names. And I would hand you the mic right away and just invite you to give a few words about who you are, what you do, not necessarily inside of the labels box, but just whatever wants to come through about yourself and the rest people about can find about you on social media anyways.
Of course, beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be in conversation with you. So hello, I am Susie Gray. I've been in business for over a decade now, which makes me feel like a dinosaur in this online space, but it means I get to bring a good range of wisdom, hopefully, to the table. So my specialism now really is in brand positioning and messaging for personal brands and, like you said, helping them become household names in their niche. And that can mean whatever you want it to mean. It's not about fame or building a global empire necessarily, unless that's what you want, of course. But it's how can you really become the top of mind name, the name that people trust, the name people, you know, want to associate themselves with, and build a brand that is reputable, that is commercially desirable, and that really, you know, stands the test of time. I'm in this for the long game, as are my clients, as I think you and your clients all are too. And there's so much richness to the work that we do through that brand positioning messaging lens. And I think this is, you know, such an opportune time for distinct voices to come to the forefront and really lead conversations that, you know, can change culture and really shift the status quo. And that's what excites me the most about my work, and the people I love to support are those who are seeking that too.
I love how you worded all of that. And can we dive into that one piece, that one final piece right away, where you said conversations that shape culture and change the status quo, basically. What are the ingredients, basically said, of such conversations, of such angles that really redefine or shape culture and that change the status quo or at least impact it?
Yeah. So I think when, as business owners, especially when you come into business, that's not necessarily what you're thinking about, because it's about, you know, how do I create offers? How do I market those offers? How do I get sales for those offers? And so we build our skill set with those things in mind. But then as you become more established and you can do those things, it's like, what more is there beyond that? And that's where I think this conversation really happens, is what do you want to do, or what do you want your business, your brand to do beyond just being able to make sales, to market offers? And that's where this kind of cultural conversation piece comes in. And I think that now more than ever, the brands that are really going to make that change need to have a, and be so solid and grounded in a point of view. And that's not new, but the point of view that it needs to have has to actually be something that feels different, that feels distinct, that offers an unconventional or a contrarian alternative to that status quo, to that conventional narrative. And not everyone has one. And I think it's important to name that. Like, when I talk about thought leadership and leading these kinds of conversations, I don't think everybody wants to do that. And I don't think everybody is best placed to do that. And so it's not about creating, you know, a hot take or having a polarizing opinion just for the sake of it, in order to get views or get attention. It's so much deeper than that. It's what are you actually here to do? If you want to create, you know, a cultural shift, what is that? Like, you have to know what that is, what that mission is, that's deeper, first, before you can start having conversations around it. And so often these are conversations for the right person. These are conversations you're probably already having, either in your own head, with your notes app, with your besties, with your peers. But there's that almost reluctance, feels like a strong word, but there's almost a fear of some kind about taking that conversation publicly. And usually that's the sign for me as to, this is the real conversation that you want to be having, you want to be leading. But because you know it's a little bit on the edge, it feels different to be the one to bring that forward, to actually start that conversation. It can feel easy to kind of tag onto something that someone else has started, but is that what you're really here to do? If you want to be a thought leader, you've got to be the one to go first, to decide, what you want to put your face and name to. And so I would say that's the key ingredient, is the conversations you're already having in private that you have felt a little bit hesitant to actually take public.
Yeah, totally agree. And also, when working with my clients, what we do when they are in that phase is, or what we do is, like, managing expectations as well, because very often it's what you said, you feel on edge with that certain POV that you have, and then you put it out there and then you're like, oh, no one really reacted to this, there is no resonance, I should probably not go with this or stick with this or put it out there. And then my response often is, well, what do you expect as the pioneer? You are ahead, or slightly ahead. So you have to give people time to acclimate to your point of view, to catch up with it, to even see or recognize it. And the expectation can't be instant gratification or validation when what you're putting forward is a completely new conversation, or at least one completely new angle of an existing conversation. And so what do you think is important? How do you help your clients go through that edginess without abandoning mission, basically?
Yeah. So it's like you're exposing yourself in a way, but it's also the audience, the public, they have to be exposed to that idea a number of times potentially before they can actually feel like they could associate that with you, or they really understand what you're talking about. So it's like the most basic rule of marketing, like repetition is important. So if this is an important conversation for you to lead, then that doesn't mean having it once. You've got to have it over and over again. Talk about it in different ways, without necessarily expecting or feeling entitled to that validation for it. And if it is important enough to you, then, you know, you have to make that decision. Are you willing to keep to sit in this discomfort until you, do start to see that reaction from other people, until you do start to actually see that resonance. And I remind my clients that just because we don't receive that knowingly doesn't mean it's not resonating. It's really important. So many, especially when when you get to a certain level, I expect you, many of your clients will come to you having never liked a post of yours, having never commented on something of yours. And that is so normal, I think, especially in, when you're maybe you've been in business a long time, you're operating at a certain level. That is normal. And so it's not that people aren't seeing what you're saying, aren't agreeing with what you're saying, aren't feeling deeply moved by what you're saying, but they may not be publicly reacting to it. And that is fine. That is fine. It's your job, your responsibility to sit with the how uncomfortable that may feel and keep doing it anyway. And we have done this so many times as business owners. Like, the whole journey is just one kind of wild ride, and we've navigated through that over and over again. And this is just another one of those examples. Who are you in that void? How do you lead yourself when you're not experiencing that validation or public recognition, applause? Can you hold yourself for long enough to get through to the point where you are actually seeing it starting to land with people?
Yeah, so beautifully said, and such an important point, mentioning that just because the validation is not public doesn't mean it's not there. Mm-hmm. Like, you and me probably also have experienced that on the client's side of thing, or on the recipient side of things, where I know the content pieces that stick with me, and the creator probably doesn't even know I exist, because it's not necessarily our default instinct to drop into someone's inbox right away and be like, oh my God, your post changed my life. Like, sometimes I do that, but not with the majority of things. And so beautiful that you put that out there, and you really mentioned that in this conversation as well. Regarding the repetition, and many people being very dopamine driven, especially conditioned by how social media works, what do you have to say to clients that come to you, or other people who are listening right now, who consciously know, okay, repetition is key and I know that, but they still fall short as soon as it gets too boring, or as soon as they feel like they're sounding like a broken record, and then, oh, a little slight change won't hurt, but then it like cracks the perception that you're just building right now yet again. And so, like, just like, how do you support yourself and your clients just like staying through not just the void, but even the feelings of boredom, the feeling or the urges of, can I add some spice to it? Like, I don't, please.
Yes. Yeah. So I think this is really where the power of stories comes in. And we all know the power of stories, and we all know that storytelling is so important in marketing. But I think it's such an opportunity when you have this core message that is important to repeat, is important to be constantly associated with in order to become, more recognized for it, known for it. Yes, it can become, it can feel a bit boring. It can feel, so repetitive to you that you think, if I'm bored with this, then surely other people are bored with this. A lie. That's a lie. But this is where I think storytelling can be so powerful, because it gives you the opportunity to share a message in so many different ways. There are so many different angles that you can approach a message with when you are telling a story around it. And that can be like, there are so many different ways that we can tell stories. They can be about us, other people, our clients, something that's nothing to do with us, internal, external. And I think when you can share through the lens of a story, it, like, the message is it's just like an add-on almost. Like, it's, if you're embodied in a message, then it is natural for you to share that message through a story. And where's the repetition then? I don't know if I've explained that very well.
You did. It makes a lot of sense. It's basically changing your outfits. Like you're like, we want new outfits every weekday.
Mm-hmm.
The person wearing it stays the same,
mm-hmm.
but the outfit and packaging changes, but that doesn't mean I'm changing. Maybe my attitude is changing a little bit based on what I'm wearing, because that influences us, right? But ultimately the core stays the same. And I think that that can be a metaphor that reflects it, because sometimes people also feel like, am I maybe abandoning things or being scatty or whatever? But no, when the core stays the same, you can mix up the packaging and play with it and have fun with it ultimately.
Yeah. I love that metaphor, because the outfit you choose for Monday might speak to a different person compared to the outfit you choose on a Tuesday. And it's just the same with the stories that you're telling, or the content that you're sharing. Even if you write it with one person in mind, everyone is going to resonate with something different. So the more stories you're able to tell that have the same message at the center, they're going to speak to different people. And that's what you want. You want different people to be drawn in to your world. And so I love that metaphor.
I love that you say that, and also speak to each outfit basically, or each story angle addressing different people. I think it must be almost on the day 3 years ago now that I published a post where I said, at that time I was launching Vanilla Detox, and someone inquired about it, and then I gave her the details, and she said, sounds interesting, or sounds good, however, not something I'm currently interested in. And I just kept promoting, rolling the angles that I promote this offer from, which has been a core concept of my work ever since as well. And then 11 days later, same person in my DMs, okay, send me the link.
Yeah.
That one piece, that outfit on a Monday didn't speak to her, but then the outfit on a Thursday did. And so she was like, oh, I didn't see myself in this before, but now I do. So now I want to become part of this. And so how consciously are you working with and suggesting your clients to work with being intentional about speaking to different buyer types and receiver types of the same message?
I don't think it's something I focus on too much, because I think you can get a bit in your head when you do that. And a lot of my clients spend enough time in their head as it is. They're very, you know, intellectual, and they think things through, and that can be a beautiful trait, but it can also be something that holds you back a bit, especially with something like content. So I don't sort of teach, you know, content buckets or specific ideal client types, even though I know everybody buys differently. I think it's more important for the individual to feel in tune with the way they want to express their message. So being clear on what that big idea at the center is, what your unique edge is as a human, as a business owner, and then how do you want to express that big idea and the edge that you have in a way that aligns with your strengths, aligns with your preferences, that feels most natural to you, that is like, that allows you to best connect with your creativity. I think when you can create content from that place, that is going to be so much more effective in like calling in the right person or speaking to, resonating with the right person, than trying to fit yourself into, you know, like, okay, I want to speak to this specific buyer type today, or I'm going to use this specific framework today. Those things have their place, and I think it's important to have awareness of them and the psychology behind them. But when it comes to expression, like, that needs to feel more like it's a creative force that's just being released. I find that tends to hit better. You know, when people are more in tune with that compared to using a proven framework or hook formula.
Yeah, I totally agree as well. And whenever I get asked about like, what's your strategy about like addressing all the buyer types and like making sure your message lands in all the ways, I'm just like, Honestly, I'm the person who connects data in real time. So I put what wants to come through out there, and then I check the resonance. Then I check in, okay, who replied to that? Who resonated with that? And who didn't, maybe as well, over time. So I can see, okay, how do things that I put out there actually land instead of just being in my head and sitting in assumptions? Because I feel like we're often taught to like just sit and get clear on your ideal client avatar and the demographics and the psychographics and like all the rotations of your message and story and the biotypes and everything. And then you put it out there and it completely differs from the assumptions that you've made up in your head. And then people are lost and are like, oh, what do I do now? Because my plan is not working and now I have no more orientation or whatever. So I'm really much a, you are also a three line in human design, aren't you? 3-5.
3-5, yeah. Well
Yeah,
remembered.
I'm a 1-3, so it's really like put yourself out there, see what sticks, and like keep going basically. And that's the approach where I personally have gathered the most data from, and what really led to a deeper understanding of people that has actually been applied and tested and not just assumed in the quietness of my chamber, basically. So yeah.
I love that. And I think that a lot of the times we try to generate more clarity for ourselves in our own head. And I find you can't really get the clarity you're seeking until you have created something, until you have expressed something. That is how you get clarity, not just thinking about something and trying to get clear on it. It's the act of creation itself and putting something out there that every time you do that gets you closer to being clear on whatever it is. And the other thing I would say is giving yourself enough time to gather that data. I think if a lot of people think if I don't experience that immediately or within a couple of days, like you were mentioning earlier, like then it means it hasn't landed. It's like you've got to give your message a chance. Like you've got to give it time. And have enough eyes on it, have it exist in the world for long enough to actually gather data that is reliable enough to make any decisions based off.
And when clients come to you and they're like, okay, but how long is long enough, Susie? And when is the point where I know this is out there long enough, but it's clearly not working? Like, yet again, that question coming from the head and from the seeking of safety, essentially. What's your response to that?
I mean, I think you need to give something a good 3 months to really allow yourself to, really like find your comfort in it. Like, if this, going back to your outfit metaphor, like if this is something new you're putting on, like you might need a bit of time to really like feel comfortable with that and to really find like, how do I want to wear this? How do I want to accessorize this? Like, what does this best pair with? Like, who does this make me feel like today? And so, like, you want to give it time to breathe. I think that's, we don't give our ideas enough time to actually breathe in the world. And so I think, yeah, a good 3 months to really solidify, this message, these angles, these are the points of view that I really want to lead with, have conversations around, start to become known and recognized for. Like, yeah, that's not going to be a few days. We're talking a few months. And then you can, yeah, analyze if you like to do that, and look at how it felt, how it feels, and maybe make decisions about what maybe needs tweaking from there or what you want to double down on. Most often it's not about like, oh, this hasn't worked, I need to change it. It's what was the piece that really landed and how can I leverage that more? How can I double down on that?
I love that. So I basically responded to a story of yours where you were talking about content actually being more of a passive game because it's I put myself out there and then basically wait for the response to come back. And while I want to go into the angle of proactively putting yourself out there in front of other opportunities later on, we often associate content volume with being top of mind, right? But you're not necessarily the content factory type of person. Like, you don't teach people like post 5 reels a day, then send 2 emails a day in the morning and in the evening, and then do this and that and all these things. So psychologically, what actually creates top of mind positioning without being on a content hamster wheel? And it's also not just frequency, it's not just energy. Like, there is a psychological process to it, very, very surely, or framework, hallelujah. So yeah, you mentioned being top of mind and tip of tongue as well. What do you think actually creates that psychologically? Because we've seen, like, people can post constantly and are still very forgettable. So if it doesn't have to do with the volume, what is it about that actually?
So I think it is important to speak to like the mere exposure effect. Like psychologically, the more somebody does see you, see your name, the more likely it is that they will remember you, will recognize you. But if what they see doesn't resonate, or if what they see sounds like everyone else, that doesn't mean you'll be top of mind in the right way for the right thing. So this is where it's so much more important to visibility is important, yes. But what the potency is so much more important than the volume. So what is that message that you are sharing in the first place, and how are you sharing that in a way that is distinct, that is meant for a particular kind of person, and how does that disrupt something within them? When you can create some kind of disruption in somebody, when you are presenting an insight or an angle that makes them like stops them in their tracks and like, I've never heard that said that way before, or this articulates a way I've been feeling that I haven't even been able to put words to. When you can create content like that, you could create one piece that has so much more power than 10 pieces that just don't really hit the spot. So it's not about not creating or wanting to create less. It's more about what is the energy that we can channel into each piece to make sure that it is as strong and as potent and emotionally resonant as it can possibly be, so that it's not something somebody scrolls past. It's something they want to sit with, they want to breathe in, and something that will actually stay with them beyond that, minute in time. We want concepts, stories that people actually remember. Like the brain loves a story. That's why I mentioned stories. The brain loves a story. You're so much more likely to remember a story compared to just, some facts. And so when you're able to do that, the volume becomes less important.
Love all of that. So in, like, I mean, there's a reason the both of us resonate with each other, each other's work. And we very much speak about similar things, just with different vocabulary sometimes. And so I just, like, had to nod all the time internally, externally while you were speaking, because, like, this is literally what I call brand gravity, right? It's something that comes weight and with, like, a certain magnitude, and is also the philosophy of my brand, my work, and my approach ever since. That I'm like, why would I put 10 diluted pieces out there just to keep up a certain cadence that I know I can't deliver on, like, quality wise, instead of just that one piece that really stays with people and that really lingers. And you also talk a lot about the architecture of obsession, right? So you partly answered that already, but still, what do you think makes someone really, like, linger mentally long after the interaction ended, even? You mentioned stories, but, like, can we go a little bit
I think this is where intellectual property is becoming more and more important. It's never not been important, but I think especially in, the age of AI and the amount of content that does exist on the internet or in the world, taking ownership over concepts, that can be a framework, but it goes far beyond that. And then having a brand language around it that it is distinct to you, that is, uncopyable, that is going to become more and more important. And when you have those pieces, that's when it's also so much easier for people to remember you and to develop that obsession, because obsession is like, there's different levels to it, but it's when, like, we want somebody to start thinking in your own thinking. So it's not just about admiration or, I like this person. It's, I feel such a pull towards their way of thinking that this is now how I want to think. It's almost like there was before this person and now there's after this person, and there's been a real non-reversible shift, and that hits at a cognitive level, an emotional level, and an identity level. And you want to be making sure you hit all three to really create that level of obsession. And I speak about, I have a free podcast called The Obsession Effect that speaks about the three gaps that need to be closed. So the first one is the perception gap, and this is really about building that authority. The second is the trust gap. You may have seen me speak about this the other day. Like, a lot of people talk about, being in a trust recession. And my view is, we're not in a trust recession, we're in a discernment boom. And it's an opportunity for you to, when you are someone who acts in integrity, which I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast will, like, it's such an opportunity for you to really close that trust gap by sharing your wisdom, sharing your concepts in ways that help people really see you're embodied in what you do. And I love the unique way that you approach things. And that speaks to me more than anything else I've ever tried and seen before. And then the final one is the desire gap. And this is really where, if it's an offer that you're selling, or it could be, you can sell much more than an offer. It could be an idea, it could be a partnership opportunity, whatever it is, but it's making it feel like commercially desirable, like bringing that obsession with, this is not just someone who I like, who influences me, but I actually directly want to be associated with them in their world.
So how would you, or what advice can you give someone who's now asking themselves, how do I actually distill my IP? Like, how do I take something from idea download in the middle of the day to draft to then locked in concept? That really is like, what are the maybe even markers that you have or measurements of a really solid locked in anchored concept or IP?
So often, this is something you would do really naturally with your clients, to the point where it feels like, oh, doesn't everyone do this? Or doesn't everyone know this? Like, it feels like it's second nature to you, because it is. But to be able to recognize, like, what do I do with my clients, like, every single time? What do I always do? And how is that different from what I know other people do or don't do? A question I love to ask is, what do I do that my competitors can't or won't do? And when you start exploring those kinds of questions, you will be able to see parts of your approach, parts of the way that you think that do feel distinct, that like, what do you know gets your clients results specifically? How can you pull those pieces out and give them a name? So I say, name it, frame it, claim it. So how can you, if it's just a particular technique, just giving it a name in and of itself, it can be a really small thing. It doesn't have to be, your entire brand framework or a modality, although of course that could be. But what is a really small thing that you do that you know is so powerful that nobody else does? How can you give it a name? What frame can you place around it? Like, this is how I describe this particular approach, this particular concept. This is why it's different. This is why it gets results. And then how can you actually claim that publicly? So talking about it as if it is your own unique concept. And that's how you start to build those associations. So people don't just start to know you because of your niche, they start to know you because of this really specific tool or technique or concept, that because they've seen you talk about it over and over, and then they associate that with the results that you get, that's what will start to not only build your authority, but create desire for the work that you do.
I love that. And then when someone feels like I'm evolving, my brand is evolving, but people now know me for this tool or for this concept or this framework, how do I not put myself or brand myself into jail with this, but still leave space and room to evolve and take people with me and not build resentment inside of my audience, because they're now like, but we're so holding on to this, what we know you for, and we're unwilling to come with you wherever you're going now, because we don't even know if we like it yet.
Just talk about another one. Like, it gets to be that simple to me in my eyes.
I love that.
I think that, like, I don't necessarily see them as boxes. It's almost like this is just a string to my bow. Mm. It's not a box I'm putting myself in. This is just another string to my bow. And the more I can add, the more likely it is that I'm going to resonate with the right person. And I think it would be, it's not impossible, but it's unusual for somebody to want to make a complete kind of 180 shift mm-hmm. with their brand. So if, you know, they've been talking about something for a long time and they feel like, you know, there's more to me now, like there's a bigger conversation I want to have, or I've done so much development on my own approach over the last couple of years. Like, I feel like I'm really being pulled in this direction and I've outgrown this part. Just take people on the journey with you. Just because you maybe stop talking about one concept and want to start talking about another doesn't mean you abandon all of the brand equity that you've already built. Mm-hmm. And the people who will be right for you in this sort of next era, they will come with you. It's as long as you talk about it, as long as you take them with you, as long as you welcome them on the journey and help them see why it's still relevant, then they'll come. They'll come with you. It's not even something that you need to be worried about. And if it doesn't resonate with some people, cool. Like, you've outgrown them too. And that's okay.
Love that. On point. And I love that. it really gets to be that easy. Just talk about another one, a new one, and repeat it long enough until people associate you with that or associate that with you. So we, like, briefly right now already touched on brand loyalty, basically, due to these associations that then lead, like, to sense of safety as well, and like all these things, but ultimately kind of not glue me to a person, but form a relationship, right? And that is also something you messaged in that story that I responded to when I said, hey, do you want to come onto the podcast and be my guest? Where you said, circling back to the beginning of this conversation, content actually is rather passive, because you put it out there and then you got to hope for the best ultimately, despite everyone telling you how much you can influence people's minds and all of these things. But your take also is, you, like, we really want to focus on relationships. And I very, very much resonated with that, because that is how I built my business. That is how I built my demand before I even had an offer multiple times. So that has always been my pathway too. But for everyone listening, like, how do you, not how do you build a relationship? That's maybe not the right question, but ultimately, like, organically focusing on relationships, how can a brand actually do that?
I think it's just about having genuine conversations. Yeah. Like, I think that it's okay to acknowledge that we're in business and a business exists to make money. Like, literally, that's just what a business it has to do, right? So there is that aspect to it. But when you just seek to build a network, whether that's whether that's online or offline, and you go into it with generosity, with mutual respect, without an expectation of a return from a conversation, then it's a breeding ground for opportunities. And when somebody knows you more intimately, you are more likely to be top of mind for them. When you make the effort to care about somebody on a level, like on a you know, on a one-to-one level, they remember that. You know, people want to feel thought of and respected. That makes them feel good. And if your name is associated with those feelings, that is going to create obsession and create a loyalty so much quicker and so much deeper than even an amazing piece of content. So I totally see them as, you know, sides of a coin, maybe. It's not that content isn't incredibly important and we don't want to be putting effort into it. We do. We want that presence. We want to be building our body of work. We want to be communicating our message. But at the same time, we want to be looking at who we want to have deep relationships with. I'm like you. I built my business based on relationships, who I knew, who knew me. And then, you know, you establish yourself. And I discovered more of the online world, and you then build from there. But it's not an either or. And I think that a lot of people can forget that, or can feel too much reliance on content creation and have an expectation that if I create enough content, or if I create great content, then that will automatically create all of the results that I want in my business. And I'm never going to say that's not possible, but it's going to be so much more likely, or more likely to happen faster, if you're also prioritizing the relationships around you and pursuing the opportunities that you seek for yourself, rather than hoping that they come to you as a result of the body of work you've created.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know about you, but I feel like we're really coming back to a more relationship-based way of doing business again. And I do think what played a big part is also that we've been taught a lot that when we connect with people, build relationships, have conversations in the DMs, we're just being categorized into the friend zone. And I think that may made more people than people actually want to admit, like, retreat from relationship building because they were scared that this would actually harm their business. Paradoxically, this is what will actually boost your business.
Yeah.
And it's really sad that we retreated from human connection just because we're afraid that we're put into a friend zone where we're then not being respected authorities and no longer hired. And I really sat with the question a lot where I was like, how can I be so close to my clients very often and still be so highly respected and well paid without negotiations, without objections? And I'm like, because it is about genuine connection. Like, if something reminds me of them, as you said, I send it over. And that did every single touch point of that relationship just deepens. And it's going to be reciprocated over time anyways. And for me personally, that's the most beautiful thing. Like, I'm just a relationship type of person. And that just really fills and warms my heart. You mentioned the pursuit of opportunities beyond just putting content out there and hoping for the best. So ultimately, what makes this pursuit feel more powerful instead of desperate? What's your take on that?
Oh, that's a lovely question. I've never thought about it like that. That's probably a good thing. I don't think, like, a woman in her power asking for what she wants from a place of conviction, groundedness, belief in herself, I don't think that could ever be perceived as desperate. Mm. That's probably why I've never considered it. Mm-hmm. I think it's people are far more likely to respect somebody who just asks for what they want. That's my experience, at least. And you're more likely to get a yes just because you've asked for it, whether you come across powerful or not. Just the fact you've asked for it, you're more likely to get a yes. I think just having a knowing that this is what I want, this is why I want it, and depending on what the opportunity is, like, what is it that you bring to the table that makes it a no-brainer to say yes to, that is, like, that's the only energy you need to worry about, not desperation. It's a whole different frequency, I suppose, isn't it? It's not a this has to happen or else my life will crumble. It's I'm pursuing this because I believe this is meant for me, and I'm going to be the one to go take it, to be audacious, to make the bold ask, rather than just hoping it happens and not wanting people to perceive me as desperate because I've asked for it.
I love that. And even the fact that it wasn't even a tiny part of your equation that this could come across as desperate speaks volumes on your like POV and your distinct way of thinking about this, right? Because I also heard about the other side a lot, where women are very afraid of coming across as, especially women, coming across as needy. Right? And that then ties back into the whole history of us suppressing our needs and not needy or whatever it is, right? And so when we hear another woman like you speak powerfully and very convictedly about how is desperate even an option here, I think that is the most empowering frequency that you could have exuded right now in answering this question. So thank you for that. And then so to seal and finalize our beautiful conversation, even though I could talk to you for 8 hours
I
probably. I'm always so sad when things end because I'm like,
know.
there is so much more to say. Anyways, while we're on it, what are opportunities that you're so glad that you've asked for? The bold, audacious asks, maybe even.
Oh, so I mean the most obvious one that comes to mind, I actually wrote a post about it recently, was a long time ago. So my background is I was a lawyer, so I trained as a lawyer. That was like the path I was on. And then it got to a point where I realized I don't think this is supposed to be my path. And so I thought, like, who is in my network? Who do I have an existing relationship with who I think would be prepared to like give me even a conversation? That was all I was seeking at this point. And so I invited somebody who was the director of an advertising agency once I was like, I think maybe this could be my path. Out for coffee. So we met, we had a conversation, and we noticed that there was a real mutual benefit like available. They needed somebody to take on a portion of, well, they didn't know that they needed it, but they were going to outsource it. So that means budget lost for them. And there was me saying, I have these skills, like I could do this for you. And so I basically, yeah, I talked my way into a job that didn't exist because I was like, these are my skills. This is how what I could bring to the table. This is the benefit to you of me doing this. Like, give me a shot. Like, give me a contract. And let's try this. And I feel like that it's probably the memory that comes to mind because it really. That was the change that put me on the trajectory that I'm on now, that changed like everything about my path. But that opportunity would never have happened if I hadn't been the one to create it. And that's the beauty of that's what I mean by pursuing what you want. It's like I feel an urge to do this, or I have a desire for this. How could I go out there and do my best to make sure that opportunity actually manifests.
I love that. It's a very unplanned question, but it's just coming to mind right now. Given your background as a lawyer, do you feel like being a lawyer equipped you with a certain set of confidence that made it easier to ask for certain things?
Probably, yeah, because it's communication.
Yeah, and as a lawyer, sometimes you gotta be very not. I don't know if cutthroat is the right word, but sometimes the lawsuits you're witnessing or that I'm witnessing, I'm like, I don't know if I could argue like this. Would my people pleaser come out? Like, I'm generally a strong, confident woman, but under pressure in certain environments, I don't know if I'd be like not sweating.
Just do it without people seeing. I mean, it's almost like a persona that you put on. And you go to work, you do your job, and you can be like completely terrified underneath. But it's like I'm playing a role. I think this is probably a whole other conversation we could have, but a lot of people talk about, authenticity online and being a personal brand and how like don't be performative. That's the message is like you don't want to be performative. And I'm like, but you are. Like, we are playing a role. We are choosing what we put out into the public and what we keep private. Therefore, it's not about you're either authentic or you're performative. You can be both. You can be completely authentic to yourself, true to yourself, and be performing a role, because you are editing and curating a version of yourself that other people get to see. And I think it's the same with, yeah, whatever role you're in, whether you're employed or not, and whatever you're asking for. It's like, you know, what face do I want to put on right now to give myself the best chance of this, of getting the result that I want?
Yeah, what a juicy turn this took. I love that. Like, for my last question for today, I actually have, like, if you had to end the conversation with one of your favorite one-liners, what would it be? Before we get into that one, I'll give you a couple of seconds to think. I'm like, the it's not either being performative or authentic. You can be both. That already has been a bar. And I think a lot of people will very much appreciate hearing that, because, yeah, this debate is so not top of mind, but like very popular. That's the word. I'm wording today, so I'm glad I'm interviewing you instead of being interviewed. But yeah, it's and I completely agree with you as well. Like, you will always be performative to a certain extent. And I also do think there is so much nuance in being performative. Like, you can be performative from a place of power and conviction. And I always say, like, your brand should be performative in the sense of your brand is a caricature of yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, the best parts of you, or the parts you want to bring forward, they are amplified and enhanced and highlighted. Yeah. But there can also be some kind of a fakeness in it, in the performance. And then you just feel one performance is more authentic, the other is more attempted, but not well executed. But as you said, whole different conversation we can talk about for hours. I gave you a couple of seconds for your favorite one-liner that we can end this beautiful conversation with.
So this is one from me. This is one of my lines, as opposed to somebody else's quote. But that is, if they are not obsessed with you, they are comparing you. So we like to talk about, competition not existing, but let's just be real. It does. If somebody is, you know, paying with their money, they are making a choice as to who they put that money with. And if you want it to be you, then we want to make sure that they are so obsessed with you that there is no other choice, that it feels like you are in a whole league of your own. They couldn't possibly make a different decision, no matter what your price. And so that's why we want to build obsession with people. It's nothing to do with our ego. It's so that the right people know 100% you're their person, and they wouldn't even consider the other options.
Period. Susie, thank you so much for this juicy conversation today. Like, I'm very much activated right now. And again, I'm like, I don't want to say goodbye, because I have 8 hours worth of more questions.
I know, we could.
We could, for sure. I'm going to put all the links, all the information about you in the show notes so people can find you. So if you're listening to this, please, please, please find more about Susie in the show notes. Check her out, connect with her, right? We've been talking about relationships. I think I can speak for Susie when I say it's more than appreciated if someone drops in and is like, hey, I listened to this, or saw this piece of yours and it really resonated with me. Even if it's not directly an ask to buy, it's still an appreciated connection point. Thank you for tuning into today's episode. Thank you, Susie, for being here. And you're gonna hear me in the next one.
Thank you for having me.